As an aspiring HR professional, or perhaps as an HR practitioner, if you're wondering what you can do to build a people-centric environment in your business, you're going to love this episode. Welcome to the Zista podcast, where we invite industry leaders and academicians to answer questions that students have within a particular area. Today, we're going to focus on how do you create a people-centric environment, a people-centric business, one that focuses on productivity, creativity, innovation, and managing talent in the most effective manner. Joining us today is Vikrant Kapoor. He's a Vice President for Human Resources at the APAC level. He works with Technicolor, has 24 years of experience, and has worked with some amazing firms like Genpact, Accenture, Conduent, and Better.com. Let's go straight into this session. Welcome to the podcast, Vikrant. We're delighted that you're here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me over, Amit. Glad to be here.
I thought I'd start by asking you about your career journey. Can you tell us some of the pivotal moments that led you to your current role with Technicolor?
I'll have to start really about 24 years ago. I had never imagined that I'm going to get on the human resources side. I come from the business, Amit, and during my initial years, I toggled between business and HR roles. But a very specific event in 2007 led me to, or pivoted me to, the HR role for good. I remember, you know, 2007 was also when the financial crisis of that time hit us. At that time, as a part of the business, I'd set up a very solid and a very successful initiative. But because of the securities crisis at that time, that initiative was being shut down. There were about 35 very talented people on that team, and I was asked to let go of them.
Okay.
I honestly expected a lot more partnership. I was on the business side at that time, and I honestly expected a lot more partnership and thinking coming from my HR partners. And I realized that I was probably expecting too much at that time. This was still 2007. The human resources function had not seen the transformation that it has gone through in the last several years. So I took it upon myself, Amit, to ensure that each of those 35 very talented people, and I'm still in touch with several of them, I took it upon myself to ensure each of those people get placed based on their skill sets, based on their strengths, either within that conglomerate or outside. Yes. I think that was my first human resources-like stint, a proper stint to ensure that I moved people into roles that fit their skill sets, facilitating that movement, working with a lot of partners to figure out those roles and facilitating that movement. Since then, I've honestly, I've been very intentional about my career journey on the HR side. I've led a lot of transformational roles across my career. You know, I've done massive IT transformation of the recruitment practices, set up global shared service centers across the world, established strong learning and development practices. So been there, done that pretty much. At Better Mortgage was when I first, for the first time across my human resources career, I moved to an India people head role. Right after Technicolor fit in very well, since it was expanding my experience from India geography to head up HR for a broader global footprint at Technicolor. So that's pretty much it. That's how I've traversed my journey on the human resources side.
It's really interesting to hear. And what strikes me is that there was this moment in time where you felt compelled to take action, look after other people, look out for them, and really help them secure jobs. That's so heartening to hear. I'm sure that would have been life-changing for you and helped you to pivot to HR. And I think in terms of the organizations where you've worked, I think they're lucky to have a person in HR like you. Because, you know, it's really important to have someone who not only looks at the skills and competencies that are required within the organization, but also looking at the well-being of employees and their respective career paths and journeys, right?
Always, always, Amit. I think to my mind, it's a very simple fundamental that firms become successful when they are able to create the best value for their clients. And they can only look at their talent to build that best value. Now, I think the job of a human resources function is to build enablers of our employees creating that value for our clients and to remove the hurdles that come in the way of delivering their best. I honestly, I'd like to believe that I live it. I'm always the one asking tougher questions, but I think it's fulfilling. Definitely, it is fulfilling.
All right. So it's really interesting that you're handling a more APAC kind of role at Technicolor. And prior to this, you were at Better.com, where you, as you said, you were managing a India head kind of role.
Yes.
Now, what's really interesting is that in a span of 2 years, you really helped that organization scale from, say, 600 employees to 4,200 employees. I hope I've got the numbers right.
True. So Better Mortgage set up its office in India, I think, in 2016. The first few years saw steady growth when I joined, and I joined them in 2020. The organization was about 600 people strong. And the idea of getting in a full-scale human resources leader was to help the organization scale to become 5,000, 6,000. Of course, we could not get to that part. We scaled up to 4,200 in a year and a half, not 2 years, but
wow.
We did that in a year and a half. What was exciting was we were hiring for some really slick commercial roles. Amit, people in those roles were dealing with large partner banks across the globe, bundling up securities and working with commercial banks. We were hiring for compliance teams that could do a whole lot of legal analysis on our sales and purchases on the mortgages that we were selling. We were hiring professionals with underwriting, with knowledge, material and real-time knowledge of underwriting skill sets for the US market. And of course, we were hiring the tech and the product talent. What worked for us was a solid partnership between the HR, the TA teams, and the business. Of course, we were aided by a whole lot of technology, curated assessments, focus on hiring experience, pre-joiner onboarding. Essentially, that entire, from the time you start sourcing a candidate to the time that candidate agrees to join the firm, how do you manage that experience? How do you go to the point of tracking, even if a candidate is rejected? I shouldn't say rejected, even if a candidate is not selected. Did the candidate have an experience, a good experience, that would still want to talk about it with their network, with their colleagues? I think that was the endeavor, and we did a pretty decent job of it through the hiring cycle. I think it was also important because most of this was done during the COVID period, right? And it required us to be a lot more sensitive, a lot more thoughtful in how we were planning and executing the entire recruitment process. Of course, engagement, focus on engagement, on candidate engagement, and then supporting our hiring managers, our recruiting team, take their interpersonal relationships to the next level. Creating a white glove experience was critical for the incoming candidates. But I think the most of it all was the whole idea that we wanted our interviewers to interview for success. We wanted our interviewers to interview to select for the talents that candidate had versus declining candidates. And that was a mindset change. I think at Better, there was a lot of path-breaking things that we did to change the entire mindset of how we hired, how we managed our talent. Our retention at that time, and I'm just
sure
that thought brings me to our attrition rates at Better at that time, while the rest of the industry was scaling attrition charts at about 35%, 40%. Attrition at Better was to the tune of 70%. I definitely look at that as one of my biggest achievements.
You know, incidentally, it's not just about scaling up, but, you know, I believe you were also rewarded by the Economic Times for the people practices that you implemented. And clearly, you're an agent of positive change. You're really about helping an organization do better, do right, what's right by the employees. And when you were talking about scaling up during the time of COVID, sensitizing your hiring team and yet making candidates feel welcome in a completely virtual environment would have been a completely different experience, right? So it's so things that we take for granted today. Now that the world has opened up, we take it for granted again, once again. It's so easy to welcome someone, just have that physical contact of shaking someone's hand, make someone feel reassured. But here you're hiring someone, they're in a virtual environment, and yet you're making them feel welcome and part of the larger family. So I'm sure there was a lot of thinking and a lot of practices that you would have implemented.
Yes, no, of course. I think it was building a lot of new muscles for us. What helped was I was supported by a very solid team. I think I only had, prior to my joining Better, I had a head of talent acquisition. But as we built the rest of our team, the HR operations, the HR business partnering, the learning and development teams at Better, I think we were able to get people who thought alike, supported by a global team and a country head who was always all about talent. I think we were able to undertake a lot of path-breaking initiatives. It's interesting that you mentioned the Economic Times recognition, because amongst all, I think the two recognitions, credentials that we got, one was the Economic Times and another one was by the Inc. 42 magazine. Economic Times, it judged us as the best places to work for women. We were also acknowledged by the Inc. 42 magazine as amongst the most successful startup offices in Southeast Asia. I think, like I alluded to earlier, I think the idea was very simple. Just make it easy for people to become successful. Ensure that they feel a sense of pride in the firm's success, right? It shouldn't have to be, I'm doing this because of the management. I'm doing this because I feel proud of where I am. Building a sense of camaraderie across the workforce and platforms for them to engage with each other. For instance, you know, a few things that we did differently that I'd never imagined earlier that I could probably do. But for instance, when hiring, we stopped asking candidates for their salary at the previous firm. We would actually start them off at the minimum to the mid of the range of the level that we were being hired at Better, irrespective of their previous compensation. The impact was huge. People wanted to reach out to us, connect with us. And of course, it's not to say that we had a weak hiring process. No, we had a very solid hiring process. We brought in a whole lot of assessments, technology, interactions. It was a full-scale hiring interview. We were a financial firm, right? And a financial firm is, in the US, is subject to, since 2007, is subject to a lot more compliances than before. Therefore, it was a very rigorous hiring process. Another thing, to your point, that we did was we trued up our spans and layers. We re-architected the entire organization structure to truly build a culture of continuous feedback and development. But that you can't do until you have the right spans and layers at the organization. This gave us a one-time opportunity to provide growth to a lot of our seasoned talent, to provide them career paths to move up the ladder, move up laterally. We supported it with a lot of coaching and learning so that the talent that was aspiring to grow laterally or vertically could build their skills, expand their capabilities. It was very important for us, and that's the third piece that I'm talking about, which also goes back to the Economic Times recognition. So the interesting thing is, Amit, that the Economic Times recognition did not come to us because we applied for it. It came to us as a surprise. The team reached out to us to say that they'd conducted, surveyed a lot of working women across the country, and the women who were working at Better, our Better employees, had talked about the firm and its practices. And that is how the Economic Times recognized us. I'd say we did a lot of things that had not been done by that point of time. For example, we equated adoption leaves to the maternity leaves for women. In fact, we actually moved away from, I should really call it, we refreshed our young parents policy.
Okay.
We just refreshed our parents policy, right? We expanded the paternal leave for men who became parents. We added in a lot more benefits for women who just become mothers. We sensitized the organization in a massive way to understand. We were working with a lot of partners in UK and the US, and we sensitized the organization. 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. is also the time when a lot of our women employees, the truth be told, are probably looking after the kids or working with their husbands to lay the table, the dinner, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to be thoughtful about the time we set up calls with them. I think all of those initiatives, the intent more than anything else, was very, very welcomed by our employees and, of course, our women employees for sure.
It's so nice to hear you talk about this, you know, when you're thoughtful and you do something with the right intention, it does have multiple benefits. The recognition was definitely a validation of the effort that you all put in. And as you rightly explained, it you all didn't do it for the recognition. It just happened as a byproduct. What you were really focused on is the well-being of your employees and creating an environment of trust, but also of high productivity. So it's really interesting for you to find that balance.
Absolutely.
Coming to your current company, how are you fostering a people-centric culture? And do you think it impacts, you know, how you engage with talent, how you acquire talent?
Let me ask a second question first. I've always believed that talent that is connected with a firm feels inspired, feels that they have a place in the firm's success story and is able to deliver and learn at the firm. That talent becomes your spokesperson. So yes, our talent acquisition strategy at my current firm, at my previous firms, has been driven by, very importantly, by our existing talent. Coming back to your first question, which is around talent practices and how do we foster people-centric culture, I think to me, it's all back to basics, right? Like I said earlier, a firm fundamentally wants to deliver its best work to its clients.
Sure.
In order for the firm to deliver the best work, we have to enable our people to deliver their best work, right? So why should my employees struggle in an ecosystem that puts a premium on a cookie cutter approach, right? I mean, the bell curve, for instance. Why should an employee's potential or performance be very synthetically managed by a bell curve performance philosophy? Or a tenure-linked promotion practice, right? The accent has to be on performance and removing hurdles to that performance. I think that's what is a leader's responsibility at any firm, any industry. I think over the last several years, I've determined what I call the EEL strategy, which is experiences, engagement, and learning. When you're able to focus on how am I building smooth, easy experiences for my employees, from the perspective of, can they apply for the leaves or do I make it easy for them? Do I make it easy for them to attend calls? Do I make it easy for them? The multiple things that the touch points in the organization, how simplified are those touch points? The second is engagement. How am I building that camaraderie? How am I getting my folks together in different touch points, having them rub shoulders together, work in the trenches, a lot of teaming. And the third is learning, right? When you're able to get the three together, it truly electrifies your talent ecosystem. And that unlocks potential because people then want to do more. People want to be able to deliver more. And the best part is they enjoy doing that. And they enjoy the stint at the firm. To me, that is very, very critical. I don't want to make light of this to say employees should have fun at a firm. They absolutely are. Employees should enjoy their stint at firm. They should have fun at the firm. It should leave them with a great memory of the network they built. It should leave them with a beautiful memory of their achievements at the firm, the leadership conversations, the dialogue, the engagement, et cetera, et cetera. I think another key element is, now this one requires a whole lot of work. I don't think I'm done myself exploring this, but removing psychological barriers, fears, the fear of asking a question or a fear of failure, I think that is very, very important. And that's the next mountain more HR leaders need to scale. It requires a lot of structured and coaching-based approach of the leadership at the firm before anyone else. I think to me, that's the next step in how do we foster people-centric culture.
Yeah, absolutely. When you remove the element of fear, you're actually unlocking a lot of potential for innovation, for creativity to come forth. Because if you're not going to get penalized for failing, you'll be more willing to experiment, to try new things. And all of us know that businesses, if they keep doing the same things again and again, you know, your performance begins to suffer. So you have to look at new ways of conducting your business, new ways of achieving an end objective. And having that culture which allows you to do that, allows you to excel, will really propel innovation and, you know, creativity in the organization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and when an employee feels that they can be a part of that creative dialogue, creative process, without the fear of reprimand, it's amazing the kind of thinking hat they come with, the kind of ideas that they come with. The sense of empowerment in such a space is phenomenally different. And they don't want to leave then.
Let me ask you another question. And I think as organizations grow, you know, you have people, you organize people into different functions and departments. And then there tend to be these silos that tend to develop. So people will think about their department or their function first. And sometimes, you know, the communication between different departments begins to drop. And therefore, the employee, the productivity of the organization begins to drop. So what can an organization do to actually enable a more free exchange of ideas, information, and dialogue between these departments so that you're trying to kind of break through the silos?
I think the process of silo breaking has to be done at a leadership level. At an employee level, Amit, we can set up a whole lot of systems, dialogue, opportunities for dialogue, social networking. You know, a lot of that can be set up for our employees to share and exchange ideas, et cetera, et cetera. But I think this breaking of silos has to happen at a leadership level. To my mind, it's always been a question, and I have asked that question in the past. You know, to my mind, it's always a question of what's a trade-off? Is it a trade-off between a functional priority or the aspiration of a functional leader versus the aspiration of the firm or the firm's priority? I think when as HR leaders, I think a lot of it is our responsibility to initiate that dialogue amongst functions and functional leaders. When you have that dialogue, I've always seen mature responses come to that. And on the basis of that, you can build around processes that facilitate exchange. Because if a leader signed up for it, then you can always set up the mechanisms that facilitate that exchange, that dialogue, that cross-functional thinking, the brainstorming sessions, the design. You can bring in elements of design thinking. The biggest outcome of cross-functional thinking that I would like to believe that pretty much every leader would understand is unlocking the value chain potential, right? Because every function either proceeds or follows another function. And when you're able to tee them up in a manner that each function is working towards expediting the creation of value chain across that value chain, most leaders align with that sense of change and the need why there needs to be greater cross-functional collaboration. So yes, to my mind, it's more at a leadership level than at an employee level, because once the leadership is aligned, then you can definitely and easily create those ecosystems where our employees are able to exchange, brainstorm, come together, and solve real-world problems in those functions.
It's really nice, you know, Vikrant, I like the way you've just laid out some of the really important ingredients. So one is to create a culture where people feel free to talk and get, you know, make themselves heard. But also another important thing that you talked about was driving things from the leadership level. Because when leadership is committed to a specific cause or maybe an approach or a thought, a way of thinking, it percolates down and it really happens. Because without leadership support, so many initiatives fail, even though they're good initiatives. So securing support at the leadership level is so important. And I think you've articulated that excellently. So thank you for that.
Glad to.
Okay. In terms of people looking to build a career in HR, what would you give them as, you know, your distilled advice? Is there something that they should do to succeed? What can they, you know, try and maybe build upon more? What, anything that you could say at this point?
I think as an HR, I let myself be driven by three fundamentals. The first one is being able to spot passion in our talent. being able to spot bias for action, and being able to spot the ability to apply themselves, right? I think every time an HR person comes across talent which have even one of these three traits, latching on to that one trait, an HR person can build an ecosystem of support to build the others. HR's responsibility from an employee's perspective is to help them explore their own potential, working alongside their leaders and supervisors. I think that is what an HR person, HR professional should always have an eye for. Understanding, what is my talent? Who's my talent? What are their skill sets? I think that's the first one that I will speak from an HR perspective, which is entirely employee facing. The second skill set that I'd recommend, that HR people are really problem solvers, right? HR professionals have this very unique vantage point, which I'd like to call the ringside view, which allows them to see the broader picture. A lot of times people who are within the ring, they're not able to see it, right? And there could be conflict, there could be confusion, there could be lack of collaboration, there could be a whole lot of things. But that's another skill that the HR team gets to affirm, which is that ringside view, so that you can guide, coach, and counsel the players within the ring of what they could do better to solve a problem, solve a challenge, resolve a conflict, collaborate better. The third, stemming from this very part, is the ability to articulate. The ability to articulate what next, what if, what's the next best, the trade-offs, the ability of initiating a dialogue or a conversation to resolve those conflicts. I think, to my mind, these three things, from a talent perspective, from an organization perspective, and then, you know, having a view to the challenges in the organization and leading the organization to solve those challenges. To my mind, how I look at HR's responsibility or skill sets or talents.
It's been a pleasure hosting you on the podcast, Vikrant. I'd like to thank you for making time in your busy day for joining us. And I really enjoyed this interaction. So thank you for coming here.
Likewise. Pleasure's mine, Amit. Great speaking with you.
That was a really insightful session. I really like the fact that Vikrant focused on aspects that are grounded in real-world insight and practice. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Subscribe to our channel. Keep getting updates as and when new content goes live. Follow us on Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Our handle is the Zista Podcast. This is your host, Amit Ahuja, signing out. Till we meet again, stay curious.